A friend of mine, when we were younger, would often say, "There are no bad dates, only good lessons." In the small group packet this month on the theme of resilience, one of the exercises that participants can choose is to do a failure resume. You can find out more with a simple internet search of what that is, or you can go to the packet, which is always in the weekly Thursday email. And there are links you can click on to find out more. The idea of the failure resume is to keep a list of all your biggest screw-ups or failures. Right? Yes, right. Personal or professional. Personal or professional. Or both. And both, right. So sometimes I work with a coach, a ministry coach, and a couple of years ago he suggested that perhaps I should offer during a sermon a confession of sorts of all the things that I've done wrong since I've been your minister. There is not enough time in a year, let alone one Sunday, to list all the missteps I've made, okay? We know that. So that was quickly abandoned, but I could create a failure resume for it, though, and it would be helpful. Because a failure resume doesn't just stop with writing down how we failed, but also what we write down is what we learned from it. So you can see how this could be a really good exercise. Essentially, it could become a document of everything we learn in a single day. It's much more likely that we won't repeat the same mistakes if we actually write them down, acknowledge them, and then write down the learning that we got from it. Adrienne Marie Brown says, "There is no failure, only feedback. No bad dates, only good lessons." And Tina Seelig, who teaches at Stanford, says that failure is just data. You need to mine the data so you actually learn something. Without the mining, it's just regret. Right? It's just regret. So I wonder what you're thinking of right now. I'm not going to ask you to say it aloud. But what is something that would be on your failure resume? It could be big or small, not just career missteps, the risk you took, the times you loved imperfectly, the moments you tried and did not succeed. And then what did you learn from that? Which of those failures quietly formed you? Quietly made you who you are? Sometimes we get in our minds that resilience, and there's a lot of support for this out in society, but that resilience is a solo project. I think it may have something to do with self-sufficiency and becoming an independent person. We separate from our parents. We grow into adulthood. And then the messages that we get from our families and society, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, which if you've done any racial justice and equity work, you know is a fallacy. You're stronger than you think. That's another message we get. If at first you don't succeed, try again, right? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Scott Taylor in the Soul Matters Packets writes that the cultural consensus is clear. Resilience depends on your personal toughness and inner strength. Sometimes I think that we spend the first 30 years of our lives trying to be self-sufficient and independent, and then the rest of our lives understanding how deeply connected and interdependent we are with each other and with the earth and with the communities we live in. Author and activist Soraya Chimile writes, "In spectacular arrogance," I love that line, "in spectacular arrogance, our mainstream vision of resilience encourages us to ignore, minimize, and even punish the desire for our greatest resilience assets, interdependence, collective versatility, and shared care." Chimile says that this vision highlights self the vision that we have highlights self-sufficiency, positivity, and individual strength instead of revealing our relationships to one another, revealing our relationships to our environments and to the systems we live in. And that makes us less resilient and not more. We're facing numerous threats of collapse and conflict these days, and those words can help us see that correctly defining resilience is not just an intellectual exercise, but a matter of life and death. We all sense it. The road ahead for us human beings is going to get rough, and it is right now rough. We simply can't afford to overlook a single source of resilience. That doesn't mean that we have to abandon completely old messages about personal resilience. There's something to that. But it does mean that we need to notice when they get in our way. It's fine to celebrate the classic image of this tree flexibly leaning and bending with the wind. But we can't let that distract us from the fact that today, the kind of leaning that matters most is leaning on each other. In addition to the slogan of, you can do it, we need a follow-up mantra of, we can't do it on our own. And even better, we don't have to do it on our own. So I ask another question, who supported you in that failure, on your failure resume with that failure that you thought of? Who supported you when you failed? Years ago when I was fired from a job, it was extremely painful. I love that job. It was my UU community, this little UU church on the Outer Banks, a couple of people. I went right to them. When my brother died, they sent flowers. I had not ever experienced that, even in my Baptist church, the kind of support I got from that community. They supported me, and that changed my story. It changed my story. And the man who was the most supportive said, we think you should go to graduate school. We think you should go to seminary. But I couldn't even imagine that. But years later, I did. Years later, like 30 years later. And when he found out, every month he sent me money to support my schooling, all those years later. His presence, their presence in my life changed that story. As I prepared for this sermon over the last several weeks, I kept seeing images of how much we do not make it on our own, how little we actually do. Take the Olympics, for example. How's the score, Dave? It's tied in overtime. Did you hear that? Yeah. Okay. It took a whole network to get those athletes there at those Olympics. Yes, he really is watching. We hear jokes about that as minister, but here it is in real time. I don't even mind it. It took a whole network to get those athletes there. Years and years of work for them, but also support from their family. It took, you know, ice rinks and bobsled runs and, you know, it took so much. When I think of it, it's so vast, I can't even get my mind around all of it. None of them did this completely on their own. I drive here on Sunday mornings, and every time I come, on roads paved and maintained by people I do not know. Traffic lights designed to manage the flow of traffic, trusting others to maintain the social contract of stopping when the lights are red and yellow. And this morning, I saw an amazing sight. I didn't even know. It took me a minute to realize what it was, but it was the backs of salt trucks lined up with flashing lights being filled so that the trucks themselves can come and attach to these containers that then go off and carry the salt. We sit in the shade of trees we did not plant. We drink from wells we did not dig. There's a whole network, an inescapable network of mutuality, as Reverend Dr. King says, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects us all indirectly. And Scott Taylor from Soul Matters reminds us that while resilience has a lot to do with what is inside of us, it is even more dependent on what is between us. We survive our wounds and our weaknesses by having the strength to tell others about it. We find the courage to make our way through the troubling and difficult times only when we sense we are not alone. Internal and individual grit only gets us so far. Empathy, assurance, and love from others gets us the rest of the way. Boil it all down and you get this. There really is no such thing as a resilient person. There are only resilient relationships from which resilient people arise. There are only resilient relationships from which resilient people arise. You know what this is, right? This interdependence, Unitarian Universalist values that say love is at the center and our value of interdependence is a petal on that values flower. Acknowledging our interdependence is often how love shows up. If all that sounds familiar to you, it's because it's in the monthly packet, which is always worth perusing. In the book Resilience, Why Things Bounce Back, Andrew Zolli and Anne-Marie Healy study why some systems collapse and others survive. And what they discovered is that it isn't strength that saves a system. It's flexibility, it's connection, it's diversity, it's the ability to listen and adapt. It's really about relationship, like the brilliant mycelium that we saw in the video. Zolli and Healy write about cities, ecosystems, economies, and they say that we can't prevent every disruption, and we know that. The work isn't control. The work is cultivation, building communities that can absorb shock and still remain whole. Resilient systems balance connection and diversity. Too little connection, and we fragment. Too much sameness, and we grow brittle. What helps a system endure is not rigid strength, but flexibility grounded in shared purpose. Remember last week, I hope you saw that sermon, how important purpose is to building and embodying resilience? We have to know our why. There's a reason that the response in Minneapolis and Portland and LA to ICE has been so robust and clear. Those folks know the purpose of what they're doing, and they have built those relationships over time. Zolli and Healy remind us that resilience isn't the absence of pain. It's about meaning making. It's having people who help us remember who we are. And maybe this shouldn't have surprised me. Maybe I'm just surprised that they included it. But they found that spiritual practices are essential. They don't call them spiritual practices, but we do. Like mindfulness meditation, faith, compassion. Those practices that steady us when the ground shifts. When the ground shifts. And eventually the ground shifts. I want to share this with you, which is credited to Howard Thurman, and I'm going to read it slowly and repeat it just so you can take it in. Resilience is to watch a gathering darkness until all light is swallowed up completely. Without the power to interfere or bring a halt. Resilience is to watch a gathering darkness until all light is swallowed up completely, without the power to interfere or bring a halt. Then, in that darkness, to continue one's journey with one's footsteps guided by the illumination of remembered radiance. In that darkness, to continue one's journey with one's footsteps guided by the illumination of remembered radiance. Remembering our radiance guides us. Albert Schweitzer says, at times our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Remembered radiance, we continue our footsteps in the light of the radiance that we remember, our own and others. I leave you this morning with this prayer from Reverend Audette Fulbright. It's called A Prayer for Hopelessness. The days that come and carry away your spirit, your spark, bow down. Lay your head on the hard earth and let your brokenness join the death that is stirring there. Life rebels against death, takes the very dust of our bones and reweaves it into glory. You were made for life, and life does not intend to let you go. But rest you can. Decay and falling away from ourselves are part of that process. If you need to fall apart, then do. For life will hold you in that too, will teach you how to desiccate and blow away, and then will call you back from the four corners of the earth and will renew you with the water of the tears of others who, like you, weep for all that is lost. She will breathe back into you the breath that washes from the mouths of children laughing, from the lion's roar, from the exhalation of trees. You will be reborn into the arms of beloveds, and together we will sing a new song.